From Capital Broadcasting Company and WRAL.com, this is The Wrap at NC Capital.
Good afternoon. Welcome to this week's edition of The Wrap. I'm Laura Leslie, WRAL Capital Bureau Chief.
And I'm Travis Fain, WRAL's State House reporter.
Thanks for joining us. Lots going on this week. Things are gearing up. We saw the first real controversial bill head to the governor's desk this week. That was the bill to reopen schools in person. It's been a big political fight. It had some pretty good Democratic support coming through on its last pass through the House and the Senate. But the governor is saying that he doesn't think that it meets the guidelines.
Yeah, and he's saying he can't sign it as is what he said. When it cleared one of the chambers and just had, you know, one more kind of perfunctory vote to get to him, didn't say veto it necessarily. Obviously, he could let it become law without his signature. Interesting that Greg Meyer out of Orange County, I believe, a Democrat leader, part of Democratic leadership, really, he voted for it. There's been kind of a split, as we've talked about before, between some Democrats and the Teachers Association, where I'm sure people are getting pressure from parents that, hey, our kids need to be in school. So kind of hard to explain, if you think kids need to be in school, why you voted against this bill. That's a tough one to put on a bumper sticker.
I was trying to understand why the governor was saying this goes against health guidelines, because in one section of the bill, it says that the schools should reopen according to state health guidelines. But I figured out, as best I can tell, in the subsection on part two, so it'd be 2A, there's the discussion of getting students back into classrooms, students with IEPs and 504s. And it specifically says that they shall be offered the option of plan A, parentheses, minimal social distancing for all of those students. And it doesn't specify that, you know, under CDC guidelines, it's minimal social distancing is okay for K to five, but you need actual regular old distancing, according to the CDC, for students from 6th through 12th grades. So I think that may be what he's talking about. Because I remember this whole discussion when this was going on, Senator Deanna Ballard was the sponsor of the bill in the Senate. And she had, you know, the whole idea, I think, at that point was to make sure that they could come back full time. But I think there's sort of this way that we're all using plan A and plan B to refer to two different things, one being full-time and part-time, and the other being minimum social distancing and regular social distancing. And so I think that may have ended up being shorthand for something that it maybe shouldn't have been shorthand for in this bill. So I don't know. That's all I can tell. I'm not a lawyer, but I've read a lot of bills.
Well, the bill also, you know, the governor has less power if he wants to roll things back. Roll things back under this bill. And also, I believe it references CDC guidelines and state guidelines as of a date certain, I think February 2nd, somewhere like that. So it doesn't necessarily account for shifting guidelines as we go forward.
So, okay, so there are things. He said yesterday in his press conference, Cooper said that he was talking to legislative leaders about additional legislation. So it may be the kind of thing where if he can get a promise to get something put into a bill to clarify some parts of this bill that, you know, they can sort of make this work. I don't know. I know, as you have heard too, that there are a lot of teachers who are very upset about this. And City of Durham last night voted to go ahead and reopen their schools, not exactly on the timeline, but close to the timeline that this bill would envision. And a lot of upset folks over there too, because there was no public comment period. So, you know, it's just one of those things. I mean, it just varies so much by community and even by school, I think.
It's a tough issue, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, just looking at the political angle of it, if it holds on for next election. You know, the next legislative election at least is not until 2022. So what are we going to be talking about then? And is this going to be one of the primary things?
Well, it is. We should point out that the bill passed both chambers with veto-proof margins. Now, it's not like we've never seen Democrats switch their votes before to uphold a veto. I do think that this would be a politically difficult one to switch. For some of these people, I think it would be costly maybe in that next election. I mean, I don't know if we'll still be talking about this, but I think if many of them switch, we'll definitely be hearing about it in the ads. In the meantime, though, a less controversial bill this week, the summer school bill, or slightly less controversial, I guess. So this was something that was unveiled by House Speaker Tim Moore, talking about the idea of having 6 weeks of in-person full-time classes over the summer to help kids catch up who have had a hard time remote learning. And it would be aimed at at-risk kids, which is sort of defined as kids who are struggling or below grade level in assessments on one or more subjects, but other kids could go to it as well. The federal funds would pay for it. They would have transportation and meals. So, you know, it's interesting that this bill has morphed significantly since it came out. It's changing sort of by the hour as superintendents and educators kind of get their hands into it and make recommendations about it. But it is interesting that when we heard this in committee for discussion only on Wednesday, there was absolutely no disagreement that something like this is needed for sure. Cause you got so many kids who are in danger of being held back or socially promoted, as they say, without having the requisite basic skills that will help them succeed in the next level that they move to.
Yeah, and one thing I don't fully understand is how this is different from summer school, because I assume there is some sort of regular summer school in North Carolina. I don't fully understand the difference here, although it's obviously targeted because of the pandemic. It'll also be interesting to see, you know, Senate Leader Phil Berger wants to revamp a little bit Read to Achieve, which deals with reading abilities, teaching reading, particularly in and around third grade. So does this dovetail with that because you know, there is a social promotion or lack of social promotion aspect to that effort as well?
Well, I think one of the big differences, at least as it was pointed out by Representative Jeff Elmore, who's one of the co-sponsors of the bill, you know, he's a classroom teacher himself. And he talked about the fact that some of his kids have just checked out the semester. I mean, they could come to school, but they're not coming to school and they're not on the computer. They're just not there. And he said what he thinks this needs to be is something attractive because it's optional. Kids don't have to go. Schools have to put it on. Kids don't have to go. So he said it's got to be something that offers more than just like boot camp, right? 2 hours of intensive learning, which is a lot of what summer school usually is that remedial stuff. It needs to offer some sports or arts or music. It needs to offer PE. It needs to offer, you know, basically reasons for kids to go aside from the fact that they may need some remediation on a subject or two. So if you have this fits into the summer camp, the reading camp, like you're talking about, and some of the other plans that are already underway for those existing programs that schools are like literally in the process of setting up plans for right now.
Also this week, we learned that a PED, Program Evaluation Division, is, I guess, going to go away. Be replaced with something else. You know more about this than I do, I think.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because that was actually created legislatively in 2007, the Program Evaluation Division. It was set up to be at the service of the Joint Oversight Committee for Program Evaluation. So if there's nobody on that committee this year and you fire all the people who work in the division, you can, in fact, sort of get rid of the division without actually changing the law, which appears to be sort of what happened. All 14 people were given 2 weeks notice this week as of Monday. And I don't understand the timing here. I mean, normally if you're gonna phase out a state program, it happens at the end of the fiscal year or at the end of the calendar year. It doesn't sort of happen in the middle of nowhere with no discussion of it. There's been some reporting, and of course they have stepped on some toes. They stepped on some significant toes over the years, Democrats and Republicans alike. And they generated a whole lot of policy recommendations that have turned into legislation over time. But legislative leaders apparently were not convinced that it was a good investment.
Yeah, there's obviously a backstory here that we don't know.
There has to be. If somebody out there watching this knows it, get in my DMs. Yeah, seriously, I want to know what happened here. Anyway, so yeah, as you said, they're going to invent something different.
Yeah. And I mean, the role of this entity is to kind of take a look at existing state programs and how well they're running. It's not the same as an audit, but like a kind of like an accountability audit. Like, is this working? Could it be better? How could it be better? Kind of like the GAO at the federal level, the government.
Exactly.
Office.
Exactly.
An arm of the legislature kind of to take a look back at things.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because this one was nonpartisan. And so whatever it's going to be replaced with is going to be more partisan. So other things happening over in the executive branch this week, we have a new DEQ secretary and a new IT secretary.
Mm-hmm. Dion Delegati, I hope I'm not mispronouncing your name, ma'am. She is coming from the EDF, the Environmental Defense Fund, to be Governor Cooper's new Secretary of the Environment, replacing Michael Reagan, who moved on up to become President Biden's head of the EPA
right.
in D.C. A lot of positive press releases about her selection from the environmental community. I don't know a ton about her other than that, but new hands on the reins.
I know she came out of the Environmental Defense Fund. So I, you know, it'll be interesting to see how the Senate responds to her in those confirmation hearings.
Yeah, and then at DIT, oh my goodness, I've forgotten the name.
Jim Weaver.
Jim Weaver takes over there, and you know, so this kind of we're close to completing some turnover that the governor has had kind of here at the beginning of his second term. So he's close to having his full team at the secretary level restaffed up. After he also moved Michelle Sanders from the Department of Administration. She moves over to Commerce. I don't remember if we mentioned that in the last show. It happened, I guess, late last week on Friday.
Last week. Yes, and she is the first African American Commerce Secretary in North Carolina history. So congratulations. A lot of legislation coming up this week. Of course, it's that time of year when everybody files everything, right?
Yeah, I can just run through a few, and these primarily have been highlighted by press releases out of mostly out of House Majority Leader John Bell's office. There's House Bill 100, supposed to strengthen penalties for littering and also pay police officers overtime to clean up highways. I had not seen that idea proposed before. Maybe it's an old one. I don't know.
I'm curious as to, I have not had the chance to ask it, what sheriff's deputies think about that.
It'd be interesting to see. Also, a kind of an annual bill getting rid of the state income tax on military retirements. That's been proposed many times. I'm not entirely sure where the sticking point has been, other than it would cost the state a fairly significant piece of money. That's House Bill 83. There was a bill filed to allow parents and others to attend sporting events, like high school sporting events.
There have been a couple of those filed. Yeah, especially, and you know, I mean, they kind of, you can kind of see the point here, because like if you are at a professional game in an outdoor stadium, they can fill that within, I don't know, 50% or something like that, or capacity or some percentage of capacity. But there's a hard number limit cap on the high school outdoor games, even regardless of how big the venue is. So, I mean, you can kind of see, you know, the argument there that they could certainly be treated the same as the professional folks.
Yeah. So that just... there are all these little bills where the governor and the Republican majority of the legislature are going to, you know, they're going to butt heads a little bit on them. So.
Another one that jumped out at me this week was a bill that was unveiled by Senator Chuck Edwards, Henderson County. This was a bill that would basically stop counties or cities or stop local governments from making any significant cuts to personnel or operational budgets for law enforcement agencies. And if they do, they would have their funding from the state, like your Powell Group Fund money, things like that, they would have their funding cut. But if they really needed to make cuts, then they could come to the legislature and essentially ask permission from the oversight or the appropriations committee for judges of public safety. As you can imagine, does not go over well with your local government groups like Metro and
League of Municipalities.
Thank you, League of Municipalities and community commissioners. There's also a proposal to require jail administrators to comply with ICE requirements for detainers. And a request for detainers, I should say. They had tried to do this last year with, or 2 years ago with sheriffs, but sheriffs are a constitutional office in North Carolina, and you can't sort of take someone out of it willy-nilly, which is sort of what that bill would have done. This one would make a jail administrator, which may or may not be the sheriff, I understand, subject to criminal charges if they do not comply with an ICE request for a detainer.
Yeah, and this is one that in a different, little bit different, the governor vetoed a year or 2 years ago. I can't remember when it was. The defund the defunders bill is pretty interesting, as to, you know, how far the sides all want to push that conversation. I think the only city I've heard of in North Carolina that is significantly defunding its police department, I think, is Asheville.
Which is in Senator Edwards' neck of the woods. But we should mention that the actual cut that was put through was 3%. Mm-hmm. So it was not a massive, there was a lot of talk about a massive defunding of the police in Asheville, because they've had some real tensions there, communities of color. But actually, the cut was 3%.
Interesting. A couple other tidbits. Read in some of the papers down his way that Charles Graham, House Representative Charles Graham, plans to run for Congress. Presumably, I mean, obviously, we're going to redraw our districts at some point. But presumably, that would be in the 9th District, where Dan Bishop, the Republican, is in office now. And Bishop, he really did well in the Lumbee areas.
As did President Trump
of Robeson County. And it'd be interesting to see if Graham, who is Native American, or I don't know exactly, but if he pulls away from that, you know, Democrats have had more trouble in those communities in recent years. So Graham, who kind of a moderate Democrat, sometimes soft-spoken, sometimes not so soft-spoken, you know, he is an interesting candidate in that race. And again, the Robesonian and a couple other papers down his way reporting that earlier this week. So that's one to watch.
One more bill that jumped out at me this week was a bill to change North Carolina's sort of graduated driver's license requirements. So North Carolina, in fairness, has some of the strictest graduated license stages of any state. I think we're one of like five or six that make people jump through a whole lot of hoops if they want to drive before 18. One of those hoops is like a year period for your learner's permit. One of the bills that's moving in the Senate right now would reduce that to 6 months for your learner's permit, which I guess is what the majority of states use for learner's permits. It would not reduce the number of hours behind the wheel they have to log as practice in order to get that, but it would speed up the process for kids who want to be able to drive. It would also allow the state to outsource road tests. And this has been a point of contention because there's been concerns about putting people in cars with young drivers, you know, because you can't do social distancing really unless you're, I don't know, test driving a bus or something. But the road testing, third-party road testing, which may have some ways to deal with that the state doesn't, I don't know, would be allowed under this bill to count for a state road test, which would really help with big backlogs that have built up since this pandemic actually got underway back March. So a lot of kids out there waiting impatiently, and their parents, to get them behind the wheel and driving to work or school as needed.
Yeah, and I mean, it can be limiting if you're a young person who needs a job and you can't get all that you need to do to get your driver's license finalized. That would obviously be very frustrating. The state's graduated driver's license system, maybe it's because I didn't grow up here. I haven't gone through it. I don't have children old enough to go through it, but you look at it online and I mean, you need a flow chart to follow it.
You do. You do.
I look forward to some detailed committee testimony on that.
Yeah. And there's one other thing we wanted to mention. Well, a couple other things. Medicaid.
Darrell Allison is the new chancellor at Fayetteville State. You may remember him. He was on the board of governors for the UNC system, left somewhat suddenly and unexplainedly.
He said he resigned to apply for this job.
Well, eventually that's what became clear. Yeah. But he's going to be the Fayetteville State's new chancellor down there. So he moves from the Board of Governors into governance of the university.
It's a kind of a controversial pick because he actually does not coming out of a background in higher education administration. He sort of emerged onto the political scene in North Carolina as the director of, or at least the first I knew of him was as the director of Parents for Educational Freedom in North Carolina. That's the pro charter school group. So some background in education, certainly not so much at the collegiate level. Also, Medicaid audit this week did not. This was not a great moment for DHHS.
No, and it's a little weird because it sounds like such a simple thing. The auditor found that DHHS was just failing to make sure that people who have Medicaid contracts, Medicaid providers, are qualified to be Medicaid providers, that they have all their licensing. And there is a third party, that some company they were contracting with to do these reviews, who just wasn't getting it done. And I probably won't surprise anyone to find that it was a complicated process. I counted 4 to 6 databases, apparently, you have to check to make sure that someone is able to do this. So, I mean, it sounds like another Byzantine process that we were failing to follow.
Yeah. And last but not least, there's an ad running, which the timing of this I thought was weird because there's this whole, I mean, I guess there's this political sort of, you know, it was a groundswell to get kids back in school. This ad started running just yesterday. I guess it's also running on WRAL as well from a group called the State Government Leadership Fund Foundation, I think is the name of it. And Into America, and it's Let Kids Learn. It's pro getting kids back into school. Who are these people?
Well, you know, our colleague Andy Spey looked into this a little bit. And I mean, it's a Republican back group out of DC or DC adjacent. And I believe they were some of the money that flowed to Tom Hoffler, who did redistricting work, the late kind of redistricting guru for Republicans. Some of the money to pay him flowed through this entity or an entity again, adjacent to it. It's kind of hard with these groups to follow all the money. It's kind of like a shell within a shell within a shell. Yeah. But when you get down to it, it sounds like it's corporate money. And what their ultimate goal here is, as yet unclear.
Yeah, and it's not just North Carolina. This is running in several states, I guess. These ads, but it is interesting. It's interesting timing, and especially so far from an election. We'll be watching that for sure. Anything else that we forgot to mention, Travis?
I feel like we have mentioned as much as we're going to.
All right. Well, we're going to get a vote this week. We are told on that summer school bill. Although, as we say, it continues to evolve. So who knows what it'll look like by the time it actually gets through the chamber. And so we'll be monitoring that.
Take care, everybody.
All right. Have a great weekend. Thanks for joining us.
This podcast is a production of WRAL.com, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. If you like the show, we'd appreciate you giving us a review and sharing it with your friends. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favorite listening app.